This is March 2nd, 1993. Shirley Bradley, Lisa Fine. We're at the Arioles Museum, and we're going to be interviewing Sue Ellen Hoteling Brown about memories of the Rio fire and of her father's work years there. Sue Ellen Brown's address is 7131 Avenue C, Post Office Box 241, Vesterburg, Michigan 48891. Phone 517-268-5588.
Okay. Just some background information we usually start with that. Were you born here in Lansing?
Wayne County, Detroit.
Oh. Okay. And did you all move here for your dad's job in the Rio?
I was adopted.
Oh, okay.
And my dad worked for a different corporation at that time, and then changed jobs and worked for Rio.
And so that's why you came here with him. Okay. Did you grow up primarily in Lansing?
Yes.
You went to school here?
Okay. My dad always lived in the Lansing-Charlotte area. Mm-hmm. But I was adopted
from
through Ingham County, and the other information they won't allow me to have, so.
Mm-hmm. You were very young, though, when you were adopted.
Mm-hmm.
What did your father do at Rio?
He was in the office, in management.
Okay. And when you were growing up, when you worked there, where in Lansing did you live?
We lived on 1210 North Logan.
Okay. And did you own a house?
Yes.
You owned a house. Did you have other brothers or sisters?
I have three other adopted sisters that are older than me.
Did your mom stay at home with you?
Yes.
She stayed home. Okay. Now we get to the good stuff. You said before when we were talking that you have very vivid memories of going to the clubhouse and the parties and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Do they still have movies when you were a child at the
At the time, it was like a dinner Christmas party.
Uh-huh.
And Santa Claus was there.
Oh.
And us kids would file down and sit on Santa's lap and get a candy cane. And all of us were dressed up in pretty dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And two of my sisters were gone at the time, and Joanne and I would go to the Christmas parties while Dad was working for Rio.
Mm-hmm. Your parents would come down with you too? It was like a family thing?
Well, it was at nighttime, so yeah.
You all lived together.
My folks had to drive us down there, and there was a night party for the adults and their family. It was a family get-together for Christmas.
Hmm. And the way you're talking about it, it sounds like it was very
exciting. I had a lot of fun. It looked
fun.
Big inside. It was big. There was a lot of people. Everybody was dressed up, and
mm-hmm.
everybody was happy.
Mm-hmm.
And we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. It was an experience that, you know, I can remember from this day on. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I was sitting way back, but I could still see Santa Claus. You know? I thought that was great, you know. Why, I get to go to one of Dad's parties, because they used to have dinners or meetings
mm-hmm.
where my mother was even, would go on trips with my dad.
Oh, really?
And things like that, you know, to like cocktail parties
mm-hmm.
and things like that with businessmen. I remember them talking about it. I remember my mom's type of clothes that she wore and the jewelry, and I remember them getting ready for these things. And there are a few pictures that I'm hoping I can be able to get. My dad's got a scrapbook,
mm-hmm.
and I'm hoping my mother is going to go through the scrapbook, and she's going to let me have it. So there would be possibility I may be able to come back with a little bit more information
mm-hmm.
about them.
Mm-hmm. Did your mom do any of the women's club type stuff? Because I know some of the maybe it was just the office staff and not so much the wives that were involved in things.
Yeah, she never was involved with,
Rio.
Yeah, she was more involved with her church.
Oh.
And us kids growing up.
So that was primarily her, her other activity was involved with the church.
Right, yeah. With the Nazarene Church. Mifflin? Over in Mifflin?
Oh, Mifflin, yes.
Church of Nazarene.
It's off, runs off East Michigan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Besides the Christmas parties, anything else down at the clubhouse or anything else? In a way that real was a part of your life, aside from the fact that that's where your dad went to work every day?
Basically,
that
I think
it.
That was about it, and that we did, we were involved in the Christmas parties,
mm-hmm.
and we were, you know, that was one thing, except for maybe once in a while dropping dad off or picking him up from work. I remember seeing the outside of the building.
You never got to go to his office? Or
no, no. I wished I could. I see pictures of what his office used to look like. And
what was he, you said he was in management.
Management.
You know what department he was in charge of, or what his job was?
I can't think right off. That's why I want to get the the scrapbook on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dad is definitely closed mouth, and my mom thinks that the information should go out.
Oh, so they have a disagreement?
No.
Oh.
No, Dad just, he says, I don't
He's
have
not
anything
do
to say. He
it's
doesn't
okay
want
to. It's okay if she wants to do it.
Right.
Oh.
It's okay for me to gather, and when she's...
He's a quiet person.
She's gathering up, but he just doesn't say anything.
That name does seem familiar to me.
That's just
Donald
what I was
Dunn
going
Hotel.
To say. I know we've
yeah,
run
we've
across
it.
It in some of our interviews or in some of the literature and things we've looked through.
Yeah, we may have even seen a picture, because we've seen other people's collections of photographs,
mm-hmm.
company photographs.
He was written up in the newspaper. I'm
in
not
the
sure if
newspaper?
It was for, I don't know, in the State,
in the
Journal.
State Journal.
Yeah, they've got one where they did a caricature picture of my dad. But I know that he was at Diamond Reel. I know he was over at Reel on Mount Pleasant, and he was over at the Motor Wheel over here in Saginaw.
Mm-hmm.
And so he filtered throughout
mm-hmm.
Diamond Reel and Motor Wheel.
Did he stay through the end? Was he there till 75?
No, he wasn't. Let's see. We moved back from, because at the time he ended up over at Motor Wheel and Duotherm
mm-hmm.
for the Rio lawnmowers.
Yeah.
And he used to do sales and upper management sales. He used to fly out. And I've still got one of the old lawnmowers, one of the original Rio push lawnmowers.
A push mower.
Mm-hmm, without no motor, and that's still in its original paint and everything.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have that? For
we
the
have museum? Several lawnmowers here. I don't know if we have the model you have, but we've been fortunate enough that we've got some of the power mowers and some of the push mowers,
mm-hmm.
and somebody told us they even had a riding mower, and I'm hoping that'll come to light.
Oh my gosh, I still have one. Yes, I drove all the riding lawnmowers that Dad would bring and sometimes they would go like to Comstock Park and do a demonstration at the park.
Oh,
even.
With the real lawnmowers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And we've got a lot of pictures on that. It's in color, and him standing there with push mower.
Is that right?
Yeah, he flew out a lot to a lot of the...
Did business trips.
Right,
yeah.
A lot of business trips. So my dad wasn't around, really around.
Mm-hmm.
And all I did was see him on the weekends, because
that was the way
Rio and Motor Wheel had him going and flying. And where I see my dad, I wave at him goodbye at the airport and hello at the airport.
Did he like going out on those trips, or did he kind of...
I think my dad really enjoyed working for the company and the corporation, and he was discouraged when LaGrange down in Indiana, when they decided to halt, and that's when my dad, that he was offered, because I think at that time Motor Wheel, or for the Reel, for lawn and garden things, the factory down there in LaGrange, Indiana, they offered him, if I'm right, I don't want to, you know, you can check it out, I think Wheel Horse and Goodyear
mm-hmm.
bought out that division.
Oh.
And they were going to move him down to Ohio and make him one of the VPs down there because he knew so much about the business. And my father said, my roots are in Michigan. And so then he went to Lorenz Lawn and Garden Place, like he was starting all over, and built their business up from a $50,000 to a $200,000 within a year and a half for the business. Now the business is closed, I understand. Mm-hmm. After my dad left the Lorenz's, it just went downhill. It
takes the right person.
Yeah,
he was very efficient.
Very good, very strict, very management minded. He ran his home like he ran his department.
Well, maybe I should have grown up in that household. Maybe I'd be a little more organized. So that would have happened before the Rio closed, before the factory closed.
Yeah, it did. Because he was back in Lansing. We moved back into Lansing in 62. It was I went into the ninth grade and I graduated in 67. So we can go back.
Graduated high school.
I went to Otto Junior High School and then I went to Eastern High School. I only spent one part of the ninth grade semester in Otto Junior High School because that's when the shop in LaGrange, Indiana closed down and we moved back into
Lansing. So you were actually in Indiana for a while.
We lived in Sturgis, Michigan, which was only 3 miles from...
Oh, and so you back commuted back before?
Yeah, because it was only maybe about, you know, a few miles away because we were right on the borderline. LaGrange is kind of like on the borderline too, so maybe the most he drove was about 10 miles to go back and forth to work.
Mm-hmm. How long were you down there?
We were down there in 60 to, I think, 1963. Because I went through 7th, 8th, and half and 9th grade. Mm-hmm. And then, like I say, moved back up here into Michigan, or into Lansing. Mm-hmm. And Dad resumed working for a different small company because he knew he had his time and things were supposed to be okay. And all that I can gather from is I think my dad lost all of his benefits through this.
I was wondering.
I think he did. It's something really hard for him to talk about.
That's another reason he doesn't feel like he can verbalize.
Yeah, he had to start all over again.
There are people, even today, that I speak with, and they choke up when they talk about
mm-hmm.
it.
I choke up when, you know, kind of, I was always attached to building cars, and that was my big dream was to, I don't know, other kids wanted to go to college, I wanted to work for General Motors. I wanted to build cars, and I was lucky to be able to be a part of General Motors and to work for the company, you know. So they hear that was my dream, and my dad's dream was management, and knowing what Rio went through, I can understand what, you know, the devastation of the fire or the closing of the plant.
Yeah.
There were people all over Lansing that were just thriving for a job, wanting to work. But at that time, General Motors, I think, shut down part of the line, and even General Motors people were out of work. So it took, from the time of Diamond Rio closing its doors till 1979, 1980, 81, that these people finally found a job. Some of them, you know, probably filtered back in other places, but I know that they filtered into the General Motors Corporation because they had factory experience.
But some of them were too old.
Right. A lot of them were too old.
Some of them were so close to retirement.
Yes, and they, well, that's why I'm sure, because all my dad gets is a Social Security check.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that he lost all of his benefits and all the years that he put in there.
And that's it, tough.
That's why it's tough for my father to talk about it.
I can understand that.
When you all came back from Sturgis, you didn't move back to the same house?
No.
You went to a different house?
We lived over on High Street, 1415 North High Street. I think it, or if it's 1514 now. They moved the house. It's right beside the gravel pit. Now it's over. If you look across from Gravel Pit, you can see the house. They moved it way around into a subdivision, but you can still, I can still see the house. And they rented that for, I think it was 2 years, and bought the house on 732 Cleo. And then I bought the house, and then I sold it.
Oh, that was when you were waiting in
That's
the apartment.
That's when I was waiting in the apartment for my folks to, because they were ready to retire. And I told Dad I would like to buy that house because I have this feeling and dream that I want to go to work at General Motors and at the body plant, and the house being only two blocks away and having a baby in that, I would be able to support my child and be able to go to work without having to even worry about transportation. Everything would be convenient for me. So my folks sold me the house, and I didn't ask for no deals either, and didn't get one. I paid the price. And I stayed there up until about since 88, and then I moved up to Augustburg, Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Shirley? Because we can move on to the fire.
We can go on to the fire.
Yeah.
I'm anxious to get
Which is actually
that.
Where we are now, because you're at Cleo,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Where you're in the apartment waiting for the Cleo house. So you already told us some of this, but if you could just maybe start from the beginning, you were home.
I was home watching TV, and my baby always was in my lap, and that I breastfed, and was watching TV, and I decided to get up because a car had pulled out of the parking lot, and I could see, you know how cars will park in front of the windows at an apartment?
Yeah.
Okay. And I just, wow, I can see the sky, and I kind of looked out there. The car moved, and I went and looked out the door, or out the window, and all of a sudden I seen this. It reminded me of Germany before they had changed the lights here in Michigan. They had these yellow lights over in Europe when I lived in Germany. And I go, my gosh, it reminds me of Germany. And then I thought again, and I says, no, my gosh, that's a big fire. I thought actually it was the chassis plant, Oldsmobile burning, but it wasn't. The more I drove towards the downtown area, the closer I got to the fire, and my gosh, Diamond Rio is on fire.
So you actually got in your car.
I had to
do all the stuff together.
I had to change my baby's diaper in case it was wet, so she would have a dry diaper. I had to dress my daughter into warm clothes. I had to put her in her snowsuit. I laid two blankets, or a sheet first, and two blankets on the floor, laid the baby on the floor, wrapped Jamie up, and tied her up real snug, and had her little hat bonnet on it, and her, I put a ski mask on her, because I didn't know how blistery the wind would be. I had to get her diaper bag, just in case, you know, because I had to keep on checking on my daughter. And I had to load my camera up with film. I took two extra rolls with me and make sure that the correct lens was on there, which I'm not sure if it was. I was in quite a hurry. I lived on the corner of Lenaway and Butler in the Lenaway Apartments there. I had a 1970 Chevelle green station wagon. In fact, it came from Gary Glenn, from Glenn's Signs. He used to put it in a car show. And it was a snazzy station wagon. And I drove towards the light. I kept on going in and out of streets, trying to get towards the light because I wasn't sure what was on fire. Mm-hmm. I thought the downtown area was on fire. I thought General Motors was on fire. Everything was going through my head. And then I pulled up, and it wasn't on Baker Street, but the street before Baker. The first street, and you turn left, just before Diamond Rio. There's two streets on each side. I turned left and then passed the store, and I pulled my car down one block and walked up to the fire. No policeman, no fire department. I then decided, how am I going to get around this heat? Because the closer I got, even when I was in the street, it was warm.
Now you're walking up Washington Avenue?
No, on a side street off from Washington Avenue that runs east and west.
Or something.
It's if you were coming from the north heading south, it would be the first street.
I think that's Elm.
Okay, and I'm not sure of this. Street is Baker Street. I just, you know, kind of read Baker Street's in trouble, you know, or something, you know, got kind of bad there, neighbor, but got bad, I guess. I parked my car, and then I tied another sheet on my back to harness Jamie around my back, because I knew I couldn't have her in the front of me. Because of the reason that if it was warm, common sense brought in, my daughter would be behind me.
And you needed to have your camera.
Right, I needed to have my camera equipment, my film in front of me. So what I did was I found the closest building to the fire, which was like a train station area. It looked like the old train station to me. I've never been, you know, really been on a train like that, only in Germany. But I ducked inside of the, I think it was a fire exit door or a service door type thing, steel door. There was at least a good 2 feet, you know, to where I was protected from the fire. And I would pop my head out and take a picture and then pop back in. And then I'd pop back out, take a picture, and pop back in. And then I heard an explosion on one side, and this would be this picture right here. And when I heard, see, you can tell that I had to come out from the building to get the explosion that I heard over here. Right. So I jumped out. Out of that doorway, and then continued to take pictures, and then that was as far as the intensity I could get of the fire on the right hand side. Mm-hmm. There was three major flames. Different sources of flames. There was one on the east side of the building, there was one on the west side of the building, and then in the center.
But they hadn't come together yet.
I think what happened is, the way I looked at it is that there's a possibility that if the fire had started in the first place in the middle.
I see.
And then I think because of the grease and the chemicals that have been on the floor through the years, I dare say that the fire trailed to something else that was on each side of the building, because
traveled along the floor.
It traveled. Yeah, you could tell how it traveled, because all of a sudden an explosion went off over there and then another explosion went off over there. Mm-hmm. Then that's when the police department came. And
did you smell anything? What did it smell like?
I couldn't smell anything, because I tried to direct, instead of going on the other side, because of the wind coming from the north.
So the wind was coming from behind you.
Right. And so I was basically trying to avoid the heat and try and find the best situation and the safest situation to be able to take pictures of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And since this building was right there, I thought that would be a good source of protection because of the brick that was on there. And so I used that side. I used the south side of the building to take the pictures.
So you were facing where the clubhouse was?
Well, I mean, I was on the north side. Yeah, I was on the north side of the building and taking pictures to the south.
Straight south. Right, just across the tracks, there's all the factory and all that.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think you stood there between the time you arrived and started taking photographs till the time you heard any emergency vehicles or anything, or anyone came and talked to you?
There was 36 exposures, 3 rolls of film. The time it took for me to drive there and everything, the police didn't come. I unloaded my cameras because I had run out of film, and I had started to back up, and that's when the police officer had drove up. And
you were already on the way. You were already.
I was on my way to backing out because I had no more film. What I was going to do is go back to the car and continue watching the fire from there.
So you were sitting in your car?
No, I hadn't reached my car yet.
And
the police officer came up to me, and he didn't give me a badge number or anything like that. He just told me that I had to leave, and I said I was leaving. And he says, if you don't leave now, I will put you under arrest for obstruction.
And you were the only one in the parking lot?
I was the only one. The police department and the fire department had not come yet. And I said, I asked him why, and he told me it was none of my business. That if I didn't leave, then he was going to arrest me because I started asking questions.
Oh.
What kind of questions did you ask?
I asked why the fire went on this long without any protection with the homes that were in the vicinity of the area because of the intensity of the fire. And there was no fire trucks on the south side, and there was no fire trucks on the north side. And by the time the police officer was there, I don't know if he might have called in, because there was a witness there, they would have to call in. And then that's when, after he went to his car, then I heard the sirens from the number one fire department right down here was the first ones, I think, to show up.
Oh, right down here at Rand.
I think it was number one fire one. I think it was the number one fire trucks that came out.
And he told you to leave?
Yes, I was told to leave or else I'd be arrested.
Did he ask your name or anything like that?
No, he took down my license plate number, he said.
Hmm.
He told me he did. That's why he would be able to arrest me. We can come and get you right now. I'm telling you to leave.
But he didn't do that until after you started asking him questions.
He didn't tell me that he would arrest me until I started asking questions why the fire department wasn't there, and why the police weren't there, and why are these houses out in the open, which they could have caught on fire.
Did he ask you why you were there?
Yeah, he did, and I told him I was a hobby photographer, and it was very interesting for me to take pictures. And he wondered if I was affiliated with anybody, and I says no.
He said that, are you with a newspaper or something?
Yeah, he asked me if I was affiliated with anybody. He asked me who sent me here, how did I know the fire was going on? I didn't. I looked up in the sky and I seen it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I can't believe there weren't more people from the neighborhood around there.
No.
The only one out, how eerie.
It was. It was very eerie. It was very eerie, because that's what I couldn't understand. All the people that are next door.
Yeah.
Or if they had, maybe they had called the fire department, which I don't know. I never got in contact with the neighbors at that time. I was more afraid because I had a few-month-old baby. You know, I don't even think Jamie was born in July. And it was that following fall it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she was born July 19th, 79. And she was only a few months old. And I was bundling her up to, you know.
What happened after you returned home? You got the pictures. You sent them to be developed. What happened?
I received some telephone calls, because when I had turned in the pictures to be developed, I had put my name and address on the pictures, and I had received telephone calls, and they told me that they had an investigator type wanting to know how I got the pictures, where the pictures are at, and they were demanding the pictures.
They actually demanded them?
I want your pictures? Yeah, they called me up and were demanding the pictures, and I don't know who it was. They never left the name.
Themselves?
They just identified them as an investigated, and you know, to investigate what had happened, and that they needed the pictures and the negatives.
Mm.
And it scared me, because if anybody would have contacted me, it should have been the police department, as so being a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not identify themselves as a witness. So I hid all my film that I had taken after I had them developed and everything. I hid everything.
Did you just have them develop at a local photography store?
Myers, I think it was Myers.
Okay.
Hmm. That's interesting. I guess I'm wondering how they got... Somebody must have known that you had those developed there or something.
Somebody must have looked through the photographs in the
store.
Either
way, they got your name through the police, who had your
through your license number. That's
plate.
What I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's probably
See, I'm not sure how that happened.
But at any rate, all of a sudden, did you get more than one phone call?
I had received a couple of phone calls, and then and that was it.
Someone like the same person?
No, it was a different person.
Different voice.
What did you tell her?
I told them I had nothing.
You didn't have any pictures.
I told them I had nothing.
Did they believe you, do you think?
I think that they thought I might not have the pictures, and then I hid them. I think that they might have believed me because the telephone calls stopped. And that was in the last part was right when I was moving out of the apartment. Was the last telephone call I received, and I think that was... Oh my gosh, I think that was spring, because I moved out just before the lease was up, but I already paid in advance
mm-hmm.
on my rent and everything, so I was all square and legal with the apartment building, and moved out.
Mm-hmm. So it was a matter of a few months. How long a period of time do you think it was from the time you got your pictures developed till you got your first phone call?
It was about 3 weeks, I'd say a month to three weeks to a month. It was it seemed like the pictures had come in my house. I was putting them in these, and I started receiving telephone calls. And I hid those pictures, and then there was a place in the back of my truck where I thought I'd put all of the negatives and all the rest of the pictures in there, and then I had those hidden because actually those were, I think, the best quality pictures that I could get out of it because of the tight film. I couldn't go to the store. I had to grab the film
I had.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do I remember that you were taking a photography course?
Yeah, Nora Singles. I was not at that time, but Nora Singles, and back in 1970, I had a 71 Volkswagen and a 1973 Chevelle station wagon, so in between that time I was a volunteer worker for the Northside Action Center, and Nora Singles headed up the photography department, and he taught me how to do photography, and through that we would gather kids up off the street and give them something to do and teach them a trade. We taught them trades from anywhere, from arts and crafts to running a restaurant down the basement of the Northside Action Center, and the photography. And the photography classes were at nighttime, always at 7 o'clock, right on the dot.
So that's how you happened to have your camera, and you knew about the lenses, and you had your film, because you were taking part in this class.
Mm-hmm.
Did Nora see your pictures?
Norris never got to see my pictures. Norris introduced me to my first fire when the furniture place burned up by the Action Center.
Northside Action Center. Yeah.
For a class, I happened to been during a class we were taking. So we all stepped out with all of our cameras and whatever he could, because a lot of the kids couldn't afford cameras. So there was a couple of extra cameras, and we took pictures of that fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, how I recognized you know, going at first it reminded me of Germany. Then I went, no, this is a fire. Mm-hmm. I flashed back to the warehouse, the furniture building fire. And we took pictures of that too, but Nora Singles got them. Because he took pictures himself.
But he knew you took these pictures.
I don't think Nora Single knew I took those pictures at all, because that was past the time that the Northside Action Center apparently possibly had closed down, because I think the Northside Action Center was renting out the building for $1 a year,
mm-hmm.
and things like that, you know, just mm-hmm. to help kids. And Norris Ingalls donated his free time. It was all volunteer work.
Hmm. Was he working for the state during that time?
At that time, I think he was in transportation.
Oh, was that right?
Department, yes.
Oh, well, he's our head photographer.
Oh. Show it to him.
He comes down here very off and on and does publicity here for mm-hmm. us. No, not
well, he knows that if I get film, I'll just grab it and use it. You know, no matter what it is, I'll adjust the camera to where it needs to be taken, because I think I had 400 ASA. I loved 400 ASA. Norris taught me with black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I had color film because my daughter being born.
Yeah.
So I wanted color pictures of my daughter. Mm-hmm. So I went into the black and white plus the color, and did black and white photos of my daughter at that time and color photos. And I just happened to have, so because I would have anything from 64 ASA, I think, all the way up to 400, and I only had 3 rolls, so it could have been any sort of ASA film speed in there, you know, that I grabbed. And I don't even know if my camera was actually really adjusted right, because I was nervous. I
would have been
scared.
Too.
I was.
When you first got out there, did you? You had a sense of the fire being in the center and not having spread as yet.
No, it had already had spread.
Oh, okay.
Then I heard the two explosions on each side, and they didn't go off at the same time. It was different. It was boom.
And then the fire really ballooned up.
And then, yeah, the second explosion is when the police officer arrived. And I don't know if he heard it or if there was a call in on it or what. I don't know. I don't have a police radio or one.
Seemed like people in the neighborhood would see that.
Well,
you saw.
Yeah, I saw it from a basement of a apartment
several
building. Yeah, and here there were people right across the street, and I was wondering,
where is everybody?
Where's the fire department? If it was me. And being at that time of night, which was not late, really late at night.
What, was it early evening or something?
I don't know,
it had to be dark. It's dark.
It was
now.
Dark,
yeah,
but I don't think
so
it was.
Oh, that's right. Winter, it would be dark.
Well,
yeah.
I think it was more close around like 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
I wonder, over on the Baker, South Cedar corner in that area, if that was engulfed yet, or whether that spread to that, or whether there might have been fire trucks over on that side.
No, there was no fire trucks.
Nothing.
On either side. Because I drove down to the one side, and that's why I decided that would be, the south side would be a bad area to take pictures, because the flames were coming towards me, and where I was taking pictures at, the flames were going up and then going to the south.
I understand.
And so I stayed on the north side too.
So really, you had gone all the way around that?
I went all the way around the block before I started taking pictures.
And like up Washington and over by the depot. So
yeah, I went down
the whole area.
Well, I come down Washington and went down Baker and went up on Cedar, and then I illegally made a left-hand turn.
Sponge that.
Yeah, that's all right. They can't give me now.
That's
a long time ago. Yeah, statute of limitations kind of freed me from that, but I made an illegal turn to get back on to that area and come around, and there was no fire trucks.
So you really had been all around.
I went all around it first before I took pictures, and that's when all of this started. Then the spreading. It was already spreaded, because I could see the fire in on the sides here,
but
running.
Oh, I see.
On
right
the sides. I could see it running on the sides. See, here's where it was before. actually before the explosions.
Oh, this is before and this is
mm-hmm.
after. Okay.
And then this is right when the explosion happened. This started building up really big. And then this explosion happened. I waited for the explosion because I had to go back inside. Then I went out and took a picture, and that was my
mm-hmm.
first shot of the, this would be, actually, this would be the south side. Or the west side
yeah.
of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't have the rest of the pictures were on the east side. And I did not get them.
Okay.
But it just kept on building. But you can see by the pictures how long I was there
mm-hmm.
with those pictures. Because some pictures were taken out. I had only had these because I felt that these were the best pictures representing, you know, the fire in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
right.
You were in between, but these were
right. There's a lot of pictures in between.
You must have been there, I'm thinking, at least a half hour.
I was there. Well,
up.
It took me, it had to have taken me at least 5 or 10 minutes to get my baby and me prepared to get into the car to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then the driving time to find it and hitting your one-way street, you got to go this way, then you're turning left, and then I'm turning right,
yeah.
and then I'm turning left, and then I wanted to go and survey the whole surrounding of the building, and the only way I could do that was to bring myself back up on Cedar and come back around.
Right,
and
right,
so I
exactly.
had to even go out of my way and then come filter my way back in on the road to be able to do it, you know, to be able to take the pictures and decide which would be the best, how I could get these pictures with the lens that I had grabbed.
I think you did a good job.
Which one, you know, how am I going to take these pictures? And I wanted to be able to see, I wanted to be able to get the pictures to where it would show, I think this is an illegal fire. I had the feeling when I was there the fire was intentionally set.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care now whoever even comes and asks me about it, because I didn't, you know, I wasn't around when it started, but I was there and nobody else was, because if so, these pictures would be able to tell you if there was a fire truck in this vicinity. And there wasn't, because I was back from the tracks.
Incredible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not the only one that suggested that possibility. Other
yeah.
people we've talked to
sort
of roll their eyes and go, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a very real possibility.
I kind of have, I don't know why, but I kind of have it in my mind if General Motors didn't have something to do with it, because of the word going around that they wanted to use the property for proving grounds.
Well,
at one
quick
time.
Way to clear it out. Huh?
Right.
It's like burning down an old house. It's cheaper than having a crew, or maybe even
yeah.
safer, because it was an old facility,
mm-hmm.
maybe even safer than having someone in there trying to take the bricks down and...
It would cost them too much money to have the building torn down as if to collect insurance on a burnt building.
I wish I had some of the bricks from it. We do have them here.
Do you?
In the museum.
Good.
Yeah, in fact, the front walk that you came up and the facade on the building, that's
mm-hmm.
all real bricks.
Oh,
and we've got several cartloads of mountain back.
Oh,
but at the time they said, anybody, I think it was in the paper, anybody that wants bricks from, you know, the factory, up to a certain time to go and get them. And then they found out that the people here in 79 were trying to create a museum. And so they said, you can have all those bricks you want if they'll be of any use to you. So this was in May,
mm-hmm.
on Mother's Day, Sue Miller, who was later on to become a director, she and her husband and their children went out there and picked up bricks and loaded them
mm-hmm.
all day long.
I've heard about that, but I didn't go and collect any bricks.
Yeah. Well, if you want a brick, I'll get you one.
Oh, I'd love to have one.
Get you one before you go.
I have one question, actually, that's not related to the fire, but I was noticing when you were trying to figure out when things happened,
mm-hmm.
you did by what car you had.
Mm-hmm.
And you also said earlier about how you always wanted to build cars. So I'm just really curious, you know, where this love of cars came from? Because you normally you think about it, and I know that sounds really sexist, but normally you think about it for men. You know, that men are into cars and they're into trucks, and you don't usually think about it. I mean, women like nice cars, you know, fancy cars.
Well, I got a truck out there.
I drive a truck. I think about whether it's trucks or wanting to get their hands dirty with cars, mm-hmm. or it just seems different. I'm just curious where it came from with you. If you think it came from your dad working in a car. Well, it was really a truck.
It was basically factory. At one point, it was just, you know, I'm a tomboy, for one thing,
yeah.
And I started a savings account and to buy my first new car. And
you were in high school then?
No, I was 10 years old. Started saving for a car.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. I've never heard that from anybody.
I didn't have my first one until I was 30. So it's really different for me.
I had to get married, get divorced, and then get a car.
Mike Denman from up there up north, he has Eminem Wrecker. And Mike Denman is... which we love to death as like a brother.
Mm.
He gave me my first thrill ride on Vickeryville Road on a gravel road real fast, and I loved it. And
you're really young.
Yes, and I says, I'm going to be a race car driver. I'm going to build my car from the ground up.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And then I went into drag racing.
You
and
did?
Yes.
You've done drag racing.
Yeah, I was with Al Moon, the Independence Racing Team.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, Al Moon, Dick Griffin. Griffith used to own the ghost shop. I don't know what they do now. Since I moved out of Lansing, I kind of lost track. I used to be affiliated type buyer from Johnson Speed Shop, Roy Johnson.
Oh, did you?
Guy with the cigar in his mouth. And that guy can talk, he can eat with a cigar in his mouth. He's great. I love listening to his Las Vegas trips, too. My first marriage, Doug Hamelink, I ended up racing cars with him and getting in the racing team.
There's a Pete Hamelink, isn't there?
I'm not sure. I know that there's a George Keenan that worked over here at the Diamond Reel, and I'm not sure if he's dead or if he's alive,
mm-hmm.
but he used to work over there.
Oh.
And he married my ex mother-in-law.
Oh.
And
so, Kai, you've been around vehicles, and it's been part of your life.
It's
since you were very.
It's been only my life. The day I walked into General Motors at the Fisher Body plant, I thought I was in heaven.
Is that right?
I thought I was in pure heaven. I built cars. I would work my butt off. If a foreman came up to me and said, Sue, we're out of glass, we need door glass buildup, I worked that night shift plus all night long. I walked out when the day shift was walking in.
Make sure they had their stock.
And made sure they had their stock. Foremans could pull me off the line and worked me anywhere I could. I just was so, the cars came so easy to me, and it's my first love, and I think I'll...
Did you start working there after high school? No. It took a while to get into the shop.
Mm-hmm.
When did you hire him?
1981.
That
was...
Your little girl was...
About a year and a half old.
Mm-hmm. Where did you start over there?
I started as miscellaneous drill with Gordon Shepherd, and I was putting in cans through inside the car before the interior was inside the car. And I went from trim. I've worked most of the wire department, glass department. In fact, my last job was NVSS job, which is a government safety job.
Oh.
And I used to put in the safety pads and the clip that held the windshield.
Around the windshield.
In there. And I painted cars. and
you painted cars.
Yes, I worked in the paint department.
My dad did there at the Fisher Body all of his life. Mm-hmm. He'd love to talk to you.
Oh, I bet.
I think you had much better paint.
That's when they
had.
Yeah, he didn't. We did. I don't think we had the lead content in there.
Mm-hmm.
But they made sure that when I did go up into the paint department over at General Motors, that they says, "Are you able to have babies?" And I said, "No, not anymore." And
they did.
Yeah.
Because of the lead in the paint.
I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why.
That's
illegal
now. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just don't know why.
No, I don't. It's illegal now. I can't ask that. I mean, now the thing is, if a woman can't go in there, who's going to have children? Nobody should be allowed to go in there.
That's right.
It's not good for anybody.
Yeah. And so I was a woman that would not be able to have children anymore. So I
was safe
for me
to
go.
You wouldn't be having any medical claims.
Oh well, we've had explosions over there.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I got blown right out of the paint booth. Yeah, I got blown right out of the paint booth. The ventilation system stopped. And they, instead of having the paint department kind of open, now it's kind of closed in and tunneled now. You should go through there, yeah. And we were inside of booze. And what I was doing was I was spraying around the door jams, and I was spraying the floor, and I was spraying the sides. Mm-hmm. And I was putting heat treatment, painting over the top of a heat treatment that was in there. And I would clean my gun every second car instead of waiting for the guy to come around once an hour. Because if you didn't, I felt if you didn't have your gun cleaned, that you would have spurts coming out and it wouldn't be a smooth paint job.
Makes sense to me.
And you have to have a rhythm and you have to be smooth with that or else you will have runs.
Did you have to wear like a space suit when you were working on it?
No safety equipment were we had at all. We made our own safety equipment. I would wear a bandana around my head and I'd put a bandana because we had a hard time over it. Fisher Body getting safety equipment.
You did.
Oh yeah, my foreman died because of a dip tank, and I refused the job. We had a 3-day changeover, and they asked me if I wanted to work the changeover. I'd get extra money, and I always work changeovers.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, well, sure, what are we going to do? You know, I'd be sure changeover, well, why not work it, you know, get the extra bucks. Well, you got to go down into a tank and clean it out. And I says, well, where's my safety harnesses and everything else? And he says, none. And three men died that weekend.
Well, there were fumes in there, like methane fumes?
It killed them. Yeah, yes. Mr. Ward was, he was a black foreman, because there's a bunch of wards in there.
Mm.
And, William Ward was his name, and he died trying to save his two workers he sent down there.
Oh my.
And one went to the hospital, and I think he lived maybe a day. His body absorbed the poison.
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty much I don't know who the two guys were, I just knew that, my gosh, my foreman died. And then they shut down the line for 1 minute of silence, and then we were back to work.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm wondering, when your father heard about the fire and saw your pictures, what did he make any comments about the reel being gone or
no.
all burned down?
Of course,
it had been closed anyway.
Right. He goes, oh my gosh, and you know, you know. Hmm. And then that was it. My dad's not very well with, you know, talking about, you know, with the words
right.
and all.
Understand.
But I think there was some thought into it. If you'd look at his eyes, you could see some thought went into it. But A reaction off of management is really hard.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Management is real hard to figure out. Not really, but they are. They're kind of real cold.
A little separate from...
They have to. Yeah, it's their job, you know, to separate themselves actually from the employees and the union and to get their paperwork done. And so they kind of separate themselves from...
Did your... sisters, you had sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have the same kind of interest in cars that you had?
No, no.
They did different things.
I have one sister who lives out in California. We're all adopted, so we're not blood related. I'd never seen Sybil. I never seen the first girl that was adopted into the family. She moved out when she found her real brother out in California when she was about 16 years old.
Oh, wow.
And then Ruth Thomas, my folks brought her into the home because she was from an abused family, and she kept on being over at Mom and Dad's house, so the woman came over and said, you can have her. And so Ruth was in our family. I never got to meet Ruth. The two girls had left before Joe or I were adopted, and I'm not sure where Joe was adopted. I think she was adopted out of Ypsilanti, or else born in Ypsilanti area, and I was born in Wayne County, Detroit.
And she's the one that's in California?
Joanne, I don't know where she's at. I'm not sure where she's at.
So you're kind of the last?
I'm the last of the
And you're the one that's closer to your parents, it sounds like.
Yeah. I see them. I'm only about 20 minutes from them now. Mm. Since I moved up north, I'm only about 20 minutes. I'm 20 minutes north of them. And I swore I wanted to always move 20 minutes closer to Phoenix, Arizona. Ended up the other way somehow. Because the price of the house sounded real good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, you may get to do that someday. You never know.
Oh, I plan on it. I hope that I can get my husband into the senior golf PGA, whatever they call it.
Oh, he's a golfer.
Well, he likes golfing. That's always been his dream. So I figured when he retired, we'd get a bigger, heavier duty truck and get a fifth wheel and grab his golf clubs and let him go to town.
Do you still work down at the...
My job was taken away from me by the local 602 and by management. This is a sad story. There was a petition being passed around the factory to try and fire a co-worker. And because of General Motors rules and the local 602 rules, that is totally, that's not a right thing to do, that's the wrong thing to do.
Why did they want to fire this person?
This person was a safety hazard.
Oh,
in the shop, but you should go through the safety.
Right, you should go through the
and
channels.
And go through the channels. And they weren't going through the channels, and they called Tim Shade a asshole on the paper. And Tim Shade was a material driver.
Material driver.
Mm-hmm. He kept on messing up. He'd tip over my bench on me, and my tools would go all
was
over.
Was this on purpose?
Yeah. Yeah. And, Lansing BOC didn't care about it, you know, they put them back in trucking school or whatever, but I wouldn't sign a petition, and because they wanted your name and social security number, and I felt that if this was a very illegal petition, I was not going to sign it, and I said no, and Beverly Taylor, Gary Walker, Julie Hauser, and Charlie Kaiser all beat me up, and I am on permanent disability, and will never be able to get back into the shop again because local 602. Ron Perry was zoned, and they wouldn't even give me a union call or a committee call because it's automatic that if somebody comes up and beats you up, you've got a week out the door. I never got back in because I wouldn't sign the petition.
And the union wanted this
The union,
person.
No, the union would rather have him in there than somebody that is actually legal and in the right and doing their job. And that's why General Motors is falling apart today, is because of how they're, like, well, we got Larry Johnson. He's been fired 5 times from the plant. The last one was on an embezzlement. He's back inside the plant. All I did was say no to a petition. I can't get
but
back
to
work.
You didn't feel it was fair.
It was an illegal petition.
It was illegal, and you didn't want to be a part of it.
No, I didn't, because I felt that they could come back and sue me if I put my name and Social Security number down there.
I see. So and you're protecting yourself in a way, too.
Right, and then Gary Walker and Julie Hauser and Beverly Taylor and Charlie Kaiser. Charlie Kaiser was standing and watching while I was getting beat up by all these people.
Nobody
management,
did to help
management
you?
And a line worker. That's what my foreman. One was my foreman.
And they did nothing to help you? The
no.
The union didn't try to
no.
help you?
No, I paid union dues and nobody helped
did
me.
Did you go to the union?
I asked for help and they would not help me. They wouldn't let me. Every time my back was damaged, every time I went into physical therapy, General Motors would pull me out of my physical therapy and I ended up having to pay General Motors $18,000 back, because they wouldn't pay for my medical bills.
Yeah. Do you think there's some other reason that they didn't want you to be here? Besides this petition? Do you think it might have been an excuse?
I don't know why. I was a good worker. I was there every day. Like I say, foremen could grab me off the line and carry me on. Charlie Socher had me, George Holland, Ron Siebel, Siebold. And Bill Mullins is the one that...
Right, and I'm not suggesting that there was, they should have, you know, that there was anything wrong with your work or there was anything...
No, they won't tell me. Dick Bennett told me today at this date when we were on the phone with him that they will not divulge the information because I could go back and sue him. So, and Ted Hart, we talked to Ted Hartman about it and Dick Bennett today about it. And
who are they?
Ted Hartman is president of the Local 602.
Oh, that's right.
And Dick Bennett is probably something like a...
assistant or...
a gopher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But nobody's ever going to help you on this?
No, no. We still try and ask for help. I wanted to go back into the shop because I was illegally taken out, and Dick Bennett admitted that today.
Did
in
it?
Fact, this is quite, I'm going to be, I'm going to remember this day forever, because finally I found out that they said that they were in the wrong, and they weren't going to give me any answers, but that if they divulged this information, that the Local 602 and General Motors could be in a lot of trouble with us, so.
Huh. I wonder if this type of thing goes on a lot in
it does. It does. All the time. Women get raped in there.
Well, that's what
that
I heard,
right?
That they just put a woman in there.
My co-worker from across me, when I worked up in the paint department, at the time I wasn't doing paint, she went into a breakdown and she says, well, I'm going to go out for lunch. I don't think I'm coming back, and I didn't catch on to what she was saying because I was busy, but I remember her saying that, and she didn't return. She shot herself out there in one of the boxcars at the parking lot at the body plant, and they tried covering that up. There's been a couple of explosions that they tried covering up inside the plant down in body shop. A guy was throwing the tobacco tins inside of the foreman's